Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 134, recorded on August 23rd, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me this week, as usual, is Mr. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Oh, it's Mr. now.
Well, sometimes Mr., sometimes no
About
Mr.
Time you showed me some respect.
Monsieur.
Hey, how you doing?
How's it going? Jeff Gamet's also here from the Mac Observer.
Hey,
you
Michael.
You didn't get a Mr.
No. Nope. Yeah. Well, Michael, what an ass. Well, I mean, hey, it's great to be here.
Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Mr. Managing Editor, Mac Observer Gamet.
And Mr. Michael, how are you?
I'm excellent. I just got back from Florida again. I went back. Did I talk about that last week?
If you love it so much, why don't you marry it?
I kind of want to marry Rockets. That would be great. But so I went down to with the last shuttle guys to check out them removing the main engines from the Space Shuttle Atlantis, which is a standard practice when they were actually flying. They remove the engines after every flight. So it wasn't one of those situations where it was incredibly depressing. It was just business as usual. And it was very interesting, and I talked to some really cool people, talked about the tiles on the bottom, checked out the crew quarters where they stay before launch. They call it the astronaut hotel for a good reason, and the rooms are, they just resemble very, very small, dinky hotel rooms, which is very fun. And I checked out the suit-up room, and where they go to suit up before they head out to launch, and have a bunch of video and photos. Unfortunately, in the orbiter processing facility, they do not allow cell phones. I was planning to stream and did not get to do that. So maybe for something else that I do when I go down there, but it was really fun.
That cool. Gutting of the shuttle sounds like the, did you see the astronaut suicides thing this week?
Oh my God. Yes.
What?
It's kind of commemorating the dismantling of the shuttle program here.
Oh, you're
just put that in the show notes for people. Astronautsuicides.com.
Oh.
It's basically a guy in a suit.
Okay. It's an artistic thing. It's not actual.
Right.
No. Oh, that'd be horrible.
You should have specified because it sounded horrible at first.
No. Yeah, that would be terrible. No, this is
a
an
neat,
artistic
yeah.
interpretation of the death of the shuttle program.
Very cool. I like it.
Photography, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I like it.
Artistic thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
Astronautsuicides.com. Yes. It's mildly depressing, mostly entertaining and artistic. Anyway.
And clever.
Oh, that link that you... I wish we could just talk about the cool things that we've seen, because, Adam, you posted that link to the Portal video.
Oh, that thing was rad.
I hope they make a Portal movie.
I would have not thought that a Portal movie could be cool or good, but that fan film, I'm assuming it's a fan film.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Is just shows the potential.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that
cool.
in the show notes as well. So if you're a Portal fan, check that out. So now we'll get to the actual iPhone stuff. So, well, by iPhone,
Wait,
I mean
we
iPad.
We do iPhone stuff too?
We do. We have communicators, huh. So we have to talk about them, right?
All right.
So Apple, according to DigiTimes and the Wall Street Journal and many other places, has officially pushed the iPad 3 to 2012. According to them, they say it's due to retina display issues. According to me, I'm guessing it's just because that's when the had planned to do it all along, which makes sense.
If this happened to be a video podcast, you would have just had a shot of my eyes rolling so far back in my head that I could see my medulla oblongata.
That's cool.
They got official confirmation?
Official confirmation from DigiTimes.
And that it's being pushed back.
Right. Not that it's going to happen on a date that makes sense. But according to them, Apple was originally set to launch the iPad 3 in the second half of 2011. Yada, yada, yada. Sources from panel players also pointed out that the 9.7-inch panel with high resolution requires much larger backlight, and a single-edge light bar is hardly able to reach satisfaction levels due to iPad 3's requirements over physical thinness, rich color support, and toughness will all conflict with the panel's technology restrictions. Therefore, this could cause a delay in the launch.
Oh, there's no fracking delay in the launch.
You know,
my God. Okay. Sorry. Your turn, Adam.
No. We had a... there is no... I'm with you. I was just going to comment that, you know, the screen thing, the Retina screen, which I do think is happening. I was at the San Diego iOS Developers Group last night, and so there's some iPhone developers in there. I was talking to one of them, and the subject came up, and he just groaned. He went, "Ah, you know, more another screen size that we're going to have to, you know, put in there." So now he has to do, if you want to do a universal app, you're talking about four different interface sizes.
Yep.
For backgrounds and images and stuff like that. He's like, that's going to just make the apps, you know, that much bigger in terms of the universal apps, all those extra assets and stuff like that. And it just creates a lot of work. I mean, even though it doesn't seem like it, it's interesting. It's one aspect of that rumor that I haven't really thought about is that it's just another thing the developers are going to have to deal with. And Apple's trying to make it as simple as possible. I mean, thank God he's not an Android developer dealing with all the different tablet sizes and
right.
screens and resolutions and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is just going to be, according to the Wall Street Journal, the next generation iPad is expected to feature a high resolution display, 2048 by 1536, which is a doubling of the current 1024 by 768.
So here was one thing that I asked him about, and I didn't even know if this is possible. Do we know, because there's the rumor floating out there that the iPhone will get a slightly larger screen.
Right. Based on the case designs.
Does the iPhone screen and the iPad screen, in terms of aspect ratio, I haven't done the math, I probably should have, could they end up with two screens, like a screen on an iPhone 5 and a screen on an iPad 3 that have the same aspect ratio? And where I'm going with this is I was wondering if you could get an iPad 2 screen resolution into an iPhone display, or is that just completely ridiculous? So they would still only have to do three assets. You'd have one that would be the iPhone 4.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
That's all right. You'd have one that would be the iPhone 4, and then you'd have the iPhone 5 and iPad 2 resolution, and then an iPad 3 resolution.
Well, maybe, except that...
I mean, is that even possible, or is that just stupid?
Well, iPad applications are generally very specific to iPad, and I don't think it would make sense.
In terms of the button layout and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which is true.
But...
So maybe that is just stupid.
Yeah, maybe.
But I kind of felt his pain when he was like, oh, yeah, now we got to do more assets and more graphics.
Well, I think it's going to affect developers like TapBots, for example, much more than developers of more simple applications that don't use as many custom UI elements, because any UI elements that are standard within the OS are, you automatically get it for free.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about it. But then again, there with the number of applications out there that do have, almost all of them have at least a few custom image assets that just can't be drawn by the OS or that aren't included. So no matter what, it's going to be more work depending on what they're doing. But I think at this point, developers have been anticipating it for a long time that the iPad will eventually move to that and that they'll have to add another set of image assets to it. It's frustrating, but I think it's expected.
Yeah.
Still kind of sucks.
Yeah. But hey, we'll get Retina display on our iPads.
I'm still not 100% sold that that's needed. But I guess if you need to up your specs, you got to do something, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, Jeff, have you heard about the new pick of the week apps at Starbucks?
Yes, and I can't believe it. I totally forgot to look and see if they had the cards at Starbucks when I was there today.
Yeah, I haven't been to Starbucks in a few days since I've heard about this, but if you're not a frequent Starbucks visitor, they generally have cards out, I don't know, I guess by the spot where you get your coffees is where it is when I see it.
Yeah, that's where most of them have it.
So they have these cards that are giving out, I believe they rotate every week. It's a free song of the week, it's been traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And now this week, I guess, they've been giving out a code to Shazam Encore. So it's an app that's normally $6. You can get it for free if you find one of these cards in a local Starbucks. Now, how do you get one of these cards? Can you just walk in and grab it, or do you have to actually purchase a coffee?
No, you can just walk in and grab one.
Okay. Awesome.
And yeah, depending on how your Starbucks is set up, they'll either be by the register, they'll be by where you pick up your drink, or they'll be over by the extra station they have where you can pick up straws and napkins.
Ah.
And yeah, you just walk in, pick one up, and they put new cards out every Tuesday.
So today the cards are gone, I would assume. At least the Shazam Encore ones.
Yeah, it depends on your store. I mean, it used to be at my Starbucks, if you didn't go in on Tuesday morning, you didn't get a card for a free song. But I think people are so used to it now, they aren't rushing in like they used to be. So now it's to the point where when Tuesday rolls around, they'll probably have a couple extras from last week's songs still sitting out.
They'll probably just throw the new ones in the front.
Yeah. And then, and so then you can grab last week's and this week's song. I would bet, though, that as people start realizing that they can get free apps, for at least for a while, those will go quickly.
Yeah. So it's not clear as to whether they're planning to switch between free apps and free songs. I'm guessing that would probably be how they do it. That or putting out free songs and apps at the same time. But I would guess they're not going Definitely. To stick just to apps.
No, I think it's going to be a mixture now of music, songs, and TV shows.
Oh, have they been giving out TV shows as well?
They were giving out music videos every now and then, and I heard that TV shows are going to get tossed into the mix now too.
Okay.
But I don't have any official documentation that tells me that. But that was just something that I was told in passing.
Gotcha. I had a question, but I completely forgot what it was. Oh, remember how Apple was touting the integration with Starbucks Music in the iTunes app on your iPhone a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Does that still work? Do they still do that?
It works in some stores.
Yep.
Older stores that never got full upgrades? No. Like around me, I don't think there's any Starbucks that actually has that.
Okay.
I think in a way it's integrated in the Starbucks app, though.
Is it?
There's like a special web page section inside the Starbucks app. I can't remember what it's called. And then that links back to music and iTunes and stuff like that.
Yeah, but for the current playing song, they had a hardware upgrade they had to do in the stores.
Ah. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about, just the current playing song thing?
Right, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you go into a Starbucks and they have a big display on the wall where it's showing music, you're in a Starbucks where that'll work.
Are you familiar with the Clover coffee that Starbucks has?
I don't drink coffee, so no.
Adam?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I don't go into Starbucks all that much.
Yeah, I haven't actually experienced a Clover coffee, but I guess it's some kind of elaborate machine. And I would like to see one. But anyway, back to iPhone stuff.
Hey, I have something that I learned about images since we were talking about the graphics stuff earlier.
Okay.
I did not know this until last night. I guess on the iPhone, everything that's rendered out to the screen is a PNG. Did you know that? And so, like, mobile
Safari... Wait, say that again.
Everything that's rendered out to the screen in an app or in mobile Safari or whatever is a PNG file. So if you have a website and you load it in Safari and it has a bunch of JPEGs in it, those JPEGs get on the fly recompiled into this... Basically, any non-optimized PNG file gets recompiled into an optimized PNG file that the iPhone deals with and uses, which is why mobile Safari kind of eats up a lot of memory on the iPhone.
That's nice.
When you're viewing stuff.
So what's the benefit for that?
You'd have to ask Apple. There's documentation online, and some people have written up articles as to what they do specifically if you want to look into the technical details. But I had no idea that the iPhone did that.
So would your website work better if you use more PNGs than GIFs?
If you used, I believe, optimized ones, and I don't know what that means. I'm still looking into
it. Is that like an enhanced pat down?
Maybe one of our listeners knows the trick, but it basically does this on the fly sort of, what do they call it, byte swapping and alpha pre-multiplication at load time.
Pre-multiplication.
Yes, and it will possibly redo the alpha multiplication at display time. It normally happens if you're developing a standalone app. It all happens inside Xcode.
When you
do the build.
That's why you get, if you go rooting around inside an application, all the images in there are, you can't actually view
them.
They're
messed up and you can't play them, or you can't open them. Yes, that's correct.
What if you try opening them in Safari?
I have no idea. But they do some sort of weird byte swapping thing, and who knows why they actually do it, but it was just an interesting fact. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe
it also makes the pages bigger, though, is the problem. Because PNG is not as optimized in many cases as like a highly compressed JPEG. Because PNG is a non-lossy or a lossless.
It's a lossless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
do you think that part of this PNG thing goes with the fast app switching thing? Because I know that there's a screen capture for each app when you switch to another one. So that when you jump back, you can have that animation of flipping or switching,
right.
and then have the application appear immediately, even though it's still reloading in the background.
Probably.
So I wonder if this has something to do with that.
Yeah, I don't think it's the only reason. I think they have some reason for doing it, but it was just, I was like, whoa, I had no idea. And I didn't know it did it for web. The more surprising thing, I wasn't that surprised about compiled apps, but web apps, you know, or web pages was the amazing one to me.
All right. So backing up a report from the iPhone, is it Tippy? What is that? iPhone blog, right? Tippy? The iPhone blog, correct.
The iPhone blog, yes.
Yes.
Tippy for short?
Yeah, T-I-P-B, Tippy. Anyway.
Oh, I always thought it was like Titanium Lad.
You're a science nerd.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're backing up. So 9to5 Mac is backing up a report from the iPhone blog stating that, according to their sources, Apple has been weighing between launching the new iPhone on October 7th or October 14th. But based on the current production status, it's looking like it will be on the 7th, and that they are also looking at starting pre-orders for the iPhone 5 or 4S or whatever it's being called, starting on September 29th or 30th, which is either a Thursday or a Friday.
I had heard September 20th or 21st.
For pre-orders?
And then I heard early October and late October.
Well, we've heard a lot
of
different
things. I'm just making
stuff
up. I'm messing with you.
Oh, okay.
Because it just seems like everybody else is making stuff up. I heard nothing.
Well played, Adam.
I'm just throwing out dates because that seems to be the trend.
You know, do you have your D&D dice?
Yeah, we could just
roll that, and we'll use that for date and time.
Okay,
excellent.
Sounds good. So, in addition to that, 9to5 Mac also posted an image, I guess from, okay, so it's a Chinese site, weiphone.com, an image of what looks to be a factory floor where
those
workers
guys get
are
all the best iPhone fakes in China.
Yeah, they're working on what looks to be the iPhone front panel glass.
Or some knockoff iPhone front panel glass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, additionally, I believe, was it today that TVC Mall posted these photos of what looks like next generation iPhone parts, the camera, the battery, and the audio flex cable? That was today, right? Today's the 23rd, so yesterday. Sure.
Sorry, am I sounding totally jaded? I've been doing this too long, I think.
Yeah.
You know, as you've been doling out all this information, Michael, I've been thinking about slipping out from my office, going to where I have a bunch of old electronic junk piled up, ripping things open,
taking some pictures,
pulling stuff out, taking blurry pictures, and then sending it out to the internet as iPhone 5 parts.
I would recommend Reddit this time.
Well, and it's funny okay. that you mentioned that, because I was thinking the exact same thing today. I mean, does anybody think that it just seems like it's a deluge of information, right? And there's just anybody could go throw anything out there and 27 blogs pick it up and start running with it. And okay, so I'm starting, you know, my filter's starting to get a lot tighter in terms of what I start to believe. So like, let's go back to the dates and let's be realistic here. So I think, you know, someone like the Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg, or there's certain sources and certain Mac sites that are a lot more credible and do their homework on this stuff. But I mean, every little thing that's tweeted back and forth is just, it's getting out of control, I guess is what I'm reacting to. So
well, part of the problem is that so many people are hearing these completely off the wall and unconfirmed rumors. Well, of course, the rumors are unconfirmed. And they're seeing little snippets of stuff on Twitter. And people are running with random rumor data. And then forgetting what the difference between a rumor and confirmed facts are.
Right. Now, so generally when I pick out these stories, I try to go with the more seemingly correct sources. So such as the Boy Genius Reports mentioned that from an AT&T, an AT&T vice president confirmed to a group of managers, he said, expect things to get really, really busy in the next 35 to 50 days, so prepare your teams accordingly. And Jim Dalrymple from The Loop confirmed by saying just simply, yep.
Yeah, so he had heard similar things from his sources.
Right, and he has good sources.
But
yes.
I mean, even in the reporting of it, so they said they confirmed from the executive, or they confirmed from an employee who said he heard something from the executive. You know, it's like those little nuances, and then what happens is it gets picked up and repeated, and by the time you're reading that post on some other blog, it's been convoluted to, oh, the VP told.
Right. So it's from a source that heard from the vice president.
Exactly.
But now, so I would not normally take something like that as a good source immediately. However, the addition of Jim Dalrymple.
Oh, absolutely. And so I'm not saying that you are. I'm just saying in general, you know, to our audience, when you're seeing things on blogs, I think we just need to get more and more suspicious of things.
Yeah, I agree. Now, with regard to coming back to the battery parts, the batteries, the camera, and the audio flex cable, one of the guys from iFixit checked out the photos, looked at the part numbers. They're slightly different from current part numbers, but one, they're very similar in terms of what the parts look like. The part numbers are very similar to the current parts, but they are different. Now, with regard to the iPhone 5 camera, or the purported iPhone 5 camera, it's slightly different in terms of cabling. The flash is slightly retooled and the actual container is slightly moved around a bit. However, according to iFixit, they think that this camera has the same 5-megapixel sensor as the current one. The battery that TVC Mall claims to be the next generation iPhone battery has a slightly larger watt hour capacity, 5.3 watt hours as opposed to 5.25. So, and it's about the same exact size with a slightly different cable. So in my mind, this is kind of either looking like an iPhone 4S, meaning that the case for these components would be almost identical to the current iPhone. So now there are rumors that there might be an iPhone 4S along with an iPhone 5. So like a low-end iPhone with a higher-end iPhone, such as what we see right now with the 3GS being sold for $100 and the iPhone 4 being sold for $200 and $300. What do you guys think?
Jeff?
You know, until I see the actual next generation iPhone cut apart by iFixit or Tech Restore, whoever pulls it apart first, I'm just not putting any value in these reports of, hey, these have to be the correct part.
Yeah. Okay. So TechCrunch is reporting additionally that according to a developer that they've spoken to that wants to remain anonymous, they've seen logs from their applications from several iPhones that indicate that there are dual mode iPhones out there, indicated by the mobile network codes and the mobile country codes, indicating that there's a dual mode Verizon and AT&T iPhone that has been accessing their application, which is something that we've expected.
Right. Sure. And even if Apple is not releasing a dual mode iPhone as the iPhone 5 or whatever the next iPhone is called, okay, whatever. The fact that they're out there testing them is no surprise at all.
Right.
I would fully expect that.
Yeah. Even if they don't announce that at all.
Yeah. This might be for not this upcoming generation iPhone that's soon to be released, but the one after that.
Yeah. So I think the more interesting conversation for us to have would be what we think or believe is going to be the updates that we'll see in a next-gen phone, just in a more general sense. But I think a lot of that's very logical, right? So I don't see a huge major case redesign. You know, as I'm thinking about it, it probably is going to be very similar, which may be where some of these rumors of 4S versus 5, naming come from.
Right.
Now, I don't put much stock in it being a larger screen. I think there's a possibility, but to me, that's a slimmer chance. I think we will see an upgraded camera, probably front and back. More memory, more storage, faster processor. I mean, all of these next generation evolutionary things, I think, are going to happen.
Yeah, I definitely
think those are things that we can say are, pretty set. Now, when you start trying to get down to specific component parts and specific specs, I think that's where a lot of speculation comes into play.
Right. Okay. So for me, I'm really expecting a 64 gig iPhone. Now, the current iPhone, the iPhone 4, is that 512 megs of RAM in there currently?
I believe so. I would have to check like Mac drive.
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is.
I believe the iPad 2 also has only 512, right?
Yeah. You know what's so funny about that statement and me not even knowing is that gets back to what I've been talking about in terms of Apple's competitors and the tablets. I have completely, and I'm a tech guy, like I normally care about this stuff, but more and more I've started to not so much care about specs because the games that I want to play on my iPad, on my iPhone work and look awesome and are awesome games. The things that I want to do with the device run well and they work well. So it's sort of like when you ask me, it's like I should know that as just part of my job, but I really don't because on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't matter to me. Isn't that strange?
Yeah, we've hit the point where I don't care if my iPad has the latest A, excuse me, has the latest A whatever processor in it from Apple or Intel or whoever, the fact that everything works the way it's supposed to, that's what I care about.
Yeah, and we're geeks. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, that says a lot to me. I had not really thought about it till you just asked me that question, Michael, but that really says a lot about the change that's happened over the last couple of years with our devices and stuff like that, because I used to obsess on that stuff.
Well, I still think that the more RAM, the better, especially with the backgrounding that Apple's doing.
Especially if you have Lion.
Okay, there is that.
So,
but that's only a recent development. You know, my Snow Leopard system was running fine with 4 gigs of RAM, and all of my iPhones, including my first generation iPhones, run just fine with the operating systems that they support and the apps that they can run. And I really don't think about the fact that one has a, you know, what, 500 megahertz processor, and my iPhone 4 has a 1 gigahertz. I really don't notice much of a difference.
And it doesn't matter.
Well, did you hear the report that supposedly WebOS runs better on the iPad 2 than it does on the touchpad?
Yes. I remember hearing that.
Which is interesting. Awesome. They say that it inhibited their development and what they wanted to have in terms of features because the touchpad just didn't have the capabilities. Which is interesting. But anyway, so getting back to the iPhone 4 does have 512 megs of RAM. The iPad 2 also does have 512. So I'm not sure if the next iPhone will have more RAM. But I think an obvious thing would be an A5 processor. In terms of the case, I got to wonder why they've waited. They've pushed it past the normal release cycle. You'd think that there is going to be something more significant than just a speed bump and a camera bump.
The most viable rumor that I think that I've heard, and I think, I can't remember if it came out of Bloomberg or, I mean, some of it's predicated on, I think, the images of equipment, 4G equipment going into Apple retail stores. And again, I put this as an edge case rumor, and I only give it credit because I think Engadget and some other credible sites that I trust kind of threw it out there. And it does make sense if you start thinking about, well, why would they have delayed it? If there is, and this, I haven't done the research yet, so if there is some new 4G chipset that is getting ready to be released that's going to meet the requirements that Apple has been looking for, I could see them wanting to get that technology in the next generation phone just for knowing that in 2012, more and more carriers are going to be bringing on 4G LTE stuff in different markets. And that way they can continue to have a device that they can sell into those markets as, you know, or that those markets can take advantage of as those cities get lit up and stuff like that. But again, Apple's only going to do that if the chips are there. So they could have said, you know, it could have been, is it supposedly Motorola, or not Motorola, excuse me, Qualcomm that has those chips. So if Qualcomm came to them and said, look, you know, we think we're going to have these things ready to ship, or we know we're going to have these things ready to ship in the fall, Apple could have looked at what was going on and go, well, you know what, we're selling real well on the iPhone 4 still. We can wait a couple months and we can get these chips in there, because I think they've been wanting to get 4G in the phone. It just hasn't been a good technical reason, or it hasn't made technical sense for them, which is what Apple has said up front. You know, I think it was it Oppenheimer who said in one of the quarterly results calls, Tim Cook said, as soon as the technology's there, we'll get it in there, but it's not there yet. So that sounds like a viable reason why Apple would delay the launch of the device, I guess is what I'm coming to. In a long roundabout way. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but it was a very interesting roundabout way. So go you.
And I definitely think that we'll see upgraded cameras.
Yeah. What, like 8 megapixel?
Maybe
3 on the front.
I think more. Like I'm definitely thinking that the front camera It at least needs to be updated. I think take some surprisingly crappy photos.
I think a lot of people would just be, you know, so anyway, everybody talks about the iPad 3 update. If Apple announced the iPad 3 and it was like, it's exactly the same as the iPad 2, except we've got a 5-megapixel camera in the rear facing and a 3-megapixel in the front. Everybody like, yeah, awesome upgrade.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about sucky cameras. Ugh. The iPad 2 is far worse than the iPhone. My iPhone takes decent pictures. I don't use the front-facing camera a lot. Do you?
No.
No.
But it, and it has nothing to do with quality. It just has to do with the application. Again, coming back to, it's sort of what do you use the device for? And the cameras that are in there are perfectly good for what I use it for. And I have some great iPhone 4 shots that I absolutely love. Oh, some of them I like better than my digital SLR.
Yeah, I've taken some fantastic photos with my iPhone. And like I said before, I took a video of the last space shuttle launch with my iPhone. And it's great. It looks great. So, Jeff, did you want to weigh in on what you think is going to be in the next iPhone, or do you want to move on?
Yeah, move on, because everything that I say is going to turn out to be wrong.
Okay.
Oh, no, what the hell? Okay. Here's my predictions.
Teleporting?
We're not getting a bigger screen.
Okay. I would agree.
I think there's a 50-50 chance of the 5-megapixel camera staying or bumping up to an 8. And I think that the form factor is going to stay almost identical and that we will see other improvements inside the device that justify the new version.
Mm-hmm. Antennas? Does everybody agree the antennas are going to be redone in some
definitely
fashion?
Definitely redesigned antennas.
Yeah, we totally forgot about that, the antenna gate.
And it really has not, I mean, for me, day-to-day has not been an issue, but I do have to say, in all reality, every time I use my iPhone without the bumper on, if I hold it, you know, in the wrong way, I do get signal degradation, and if I'm where a weak signal is, I can drop calls. So
yeah, but I feel,
you know,
like,
as much as Apple didn't want to say that's the reality, there's a certain reality there.
But that it's happened with every single iPhone and other phones as well.
Yeah, maybe I never noticed it before.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't seem to be as big a problem on my 3GS, but. Regardless, I think that predicates the need for Apple to do some sort of redesign.
Yeah, I think so.
With the antennas.
All right. So moving on to some real news.
Real
How about
news.
That? Yes. AT&T is eliminating the $10 text messaging plan for new customers. So the $10 text messaging plan, which provided 1,000 text messages, is being eliminated for new customers. Anyone who currently has it will be grandfathered in.
We don't have a clean tag on this show, right?
No.
Fuck you very much, AT&T. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
Are you on a 1,000 message plan?
No, I'm not, but it's asinine and it's ridiculous.
Oh, I
and
agree.
It freaking irritates me to no end.
If you're mad now, let me read what they say, what their official statement is. Starting August 21st, we're streamlining our text messaging plans for new customers and we'll offer an unlimited plan for individuals for $20 per month and unlimited for families, blah, 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 blah. The vast majority of our messaging customers prefer unlimited plans, and with text messaging growth stronger than ever, that number continues to climb among new customers. Existing
you know
customers
what?
Don't have to change any blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah.
You know what? AT&T is so full of shit.
Yep, I agree. Yes.
That is a total bullshit statement. They're doing exactly what they did before, where they took away the 200 a month message plan.
I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And said, no, this makes it easier for people. No, it doesn't. It makes it easier for you to charge people more money because you're cutting out the lower price options.
It wasn't like a confusing option where, oh, I don't know. What do I get with 1,000 as opposed to 250? I don't get it.
And keep in mind, they're so slimy. You notice this is only for new customers. And the reason being is that if they change it with existing customers can get out of their contracts without having to pay ETF fees.
Exactly.
So they never, you'll notice, if you're in a contract, you know, think they do that grandfathering in and stuff for your benefit. No,
no.
It's absolutely for their benefit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's, I've, you know, when my mother was on the per text message plan with T-Mobile a few years ago, and she was able to get out of her contract because they changed the per text message rate. And so that's exactly correct. If they actually changed it for people who currently have it, they would be able to get out of it. No questions asked.
Yeah. So if you go with the pay as you go, if you go, screw it, I'm not going to do the unlimited thing because I don't want to pay $20 or $30 a month, depending on if you want the, you know, family plan or not. It's 20 cents a message. So you do that math. It's like, that's astronomical compared to the amount of data that you get.
Yeah.
Or that you're actually using. It's just, it's unbelievable. And what's more irksome about it to me is that every one of their competitors is going to follow suit. I guarantee you. I give it a couple months and everybody else is doing the same thing.
Oh, sure. They're letting AT&T be the bad guy. Everyone rolls over and takes it because that's what you have to do. And then once people seem to be getting into the groove of, well, this is what it is, then the other carriers will just line up and do the same thing.
But you know what's great? We all don't have to roll over and take it because iOS 5 is coming.
I am so looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm probably still going to keep my unlimited texting, though.
Yeah, I'll keep my unlimited texting. Because I use it for more than just chatting with friends.
But, well, yeah, but I mean, it's going to make a lot of people hard consider things like, Google Voice is free SMS. There's a lot of really great alternative SMS apps out there.
So,
I mean, AT&T probably thinks they're going to get some big cash, you know, thing coming in. And I think they will to a certain degree, but I have a feeling the smart people are going to bail and they're going to go with iMessage. They're going to go with some other plan like Google Voice. I mean, the days of text messaging, it being able to be charged what it's being charged, they've lobbed the starting volley that's going to fuel the revolution, I think, at this point, where people are just going to say enough is enough. This is complete and utter BS. And I'm willing to help take up and lead that charge because this is just getting ridiculous. And I'm going on a rant again. I ranted about this on my show because consumers are demanding more data. It's the weirdest dichotomy in economics. Somebody needs to write their thesis paper on this, that, you know, consumers are demanding and wanting more and more data. There's huge demand and the carriers are providing less and less service and less options. And I don't get it. It's like, even if you want unlimited, even if you want to pay for that stuff, they don't let you, which that's where the economic disconnect comes into me. You can't even buy the plan if you want it, right?
Data, you mean?
Data or anything. I mean, texting, yeah, unlimited, whatever, if you want to count that as data. But yeah, I'm talking about just across the board. Just there's a huge disconnect between what the carriers are offering and what consumers are demanding.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've ever seen it in any other kind of situation. I mean, maybe there's another historical example, but not in my lifetime that I can think of.
You know, I saw somewhere, and I'm sorry, I can't remember where it was, but it was in about the last week or so, a report where it was saying that the profit margin for text messages for cell carriers like AT&T, it's like 10,000,000%. Because it's essentially a non-issue for carriers because they're just taking up some empty space in header information for voice stuff. It doesn't even go through data. So there's essentially no overhead for the cell carriers. And yet they keep jacking up these prices more and more. If this is a video podcast, you'd see me looking at my medulla oblongata again.
So, do we want to talk about HP spinning off their tablet and smartphone? They're just stopping it, right? They're exiting completely the smartphone and tablet hardware market.
Yeah, they're like, we're done with this rat race. And the PC market, too, hopefully, if they can.
which is very interesting, considering I think they're the number one supplier of PCs.
Yeah, but when you stop to really think about it, it makes a lot of sense. I think they're tired of the low margin.
Oh yeah, it's like,
you know, high marketing, high dollar cost, you know, commodity PC business. It's just gotten too crazy, and it's getting worse with the tablets coming on board.
Yeah, they make like $58 compared to Apple, which makes like $350.
Yeah, computer. And they have other aspects of their business that are much, much more profitable. And you know, frankly, I think it makes more sense to focus on those aspects of the business and let the Dells and the Acers and the other guys duke it out for all that little money. I mean, it's a large portion of their business, and I think that's what people are reacting to. I mean, was it like $41 billion part of their business? But you know, I think they just like it's we're done. We're done playing that game.
It seems like it's
going to go with our business customers and our servers where we can actually make profits.
It seems like it's a good forward looking move. They're going to continue working on webOS.
You know, I'm very disappointed with this move.
Okay.
Because HP is a company that had the potential to do just what Apple's doing with hardware.
Yep.
And that's, in my opinion, the best way to compete with what the iPad has to offer.
Yeah.
Now that you're bringing that, I want to ask you a question, Jeff, because I asked this of Ken Ray recently, I think, on the member show that I just did with him. Everybody talks about, you know, webOS and its potential with HP and things like that. So in your opinion, why didn't it work for them? Because it seems like you're saying, all the cards were in place where this should have been huge.
It went wrong was internally. I think that the corporate philosophy and the whole corporate structure at HP is geared towards the way that they have been doing things. And the idea of taking the tablet and doing with it something along the lines of what Apple does or did, which is you design the OS, you design the hardware, you optimize everything on both ends to work well together, and then you build the right device. That's not how HP thinks for something like that. It's what features do we need to have? What specs do we need to have? Now, how do we figure out how to fit that into this budget here? And then you also have a CEO that's a software guy. And the whole vision of what you can do with the whole widget, I don't think is something that Apotheker can really wrap his head around, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Although in this case, I think it was a disastrous thing because HP had the potential to be so much more in the tablet market. And that will never happen now. And webOS, which had the potential to be such a powerful competitor to iOS, will never get to be that. Because assuming they actually do anything with it, it will now be exactly what everything else has always been, which is a company makes a plain vanilla operating system designed to run on a generic hardware platform, and then you license it out to other companies, and you get whatever it is that you get.
So you're not buying like me. I'm not buying that this was a failure of, like the engineers are saying, of hardware necessarily. To me, it seems more like a failure of vision and a failure to take something that had great potential and use what the resources they had to realize that potential.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Now, the hardware failure, that is merely a side effect of the true failure.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm kind of falling in the same way. And then, so when they said that they're going to keep the OS, which I think is a, you know, if you talk to a lot of people in the tech industry who've really analyzed it, they say it's a great platform. I think the problem they have now is there's no buyer for that. Like who's going to pick it up? Everybody else is already invested in Android or something else.
Yeah.
Right. And with Google picking up Motorola, and I hadn't thought about this really hard until just now. You know, I know Google, when they acquired Motorola Mobility, said they were committed to Android and making the OS available on other smartphone platforms. Did they specifically say anything about tablets?
I don't remember anything about tablets.
Right. So now I'm starting to wonder if, because we're hearing lots of people say, well, both Microsoft and Google are going to be moving more in the direction of Apple in doing an integrated hardware and software platform on their next generation sort of tablet competitors. that they're going to have to move in the direction that Apple has already taken and try and replicate what Apple's doing. And certainly Google would, if they do end up acquiring Motorola Mobility, would be poised to, you know, take Honeycomb or whatever ice cream sandwich, whatever the next thing is, and get it really running great on a next-gen Motorola tablet.
Yeah, they'd be in a great position to do that.
Yeah.
Now we'll see if Google has the vision for that.
Right. But on the HP yeah. side, I mean, who's going to pick up the WebOS and run with it?
If I was a hardware manufacturer and I was looking at my options between Android, WebOS, and Microsoft Windows Mobile 7 or 8 mm-hmm. today, honestly, I think I would end up going and talking to Microsoft, because Google has just their endless list of patent issues and isn't showing me that they're standing up for their developers and partners the way they need to. Mm-hmm. HP has shown us that they have no commitment to the platform they made, which then leaves Microsoft. And you know Microsoft wants to have Windows Mobile on every device they can possibly get it on. So going to them and saying, this is what we want to do, you know they're going to work with you.
Well, what do you think about Microsoft is being thrown around, Microsoft picking up the HP hardware business, the PC business?
I don't see that
doing their own hardware. Me neither. I think it's a crazy idea, but it's something funny. It's interesting to think about.
Yes, it is.
I think it's interesting and fun to think about. I don't think Microsoft has the ability to even comprehend figuring out how to make that work, just culturally.
Yeah.
No. Well, they don't actually make any of their own stuff anyhow.
Well, no, but I mean, they could. They could buy up HP and suddenly have a division where they could build hardware and they could, you know, retool their software to run really well on that hardware and take up the Apple model. But I think it's just not even... You know, people are throwing that out, but it's not even in their corporate culture to even fathom that. Like, I don't even think they would know where to start.
No, they wouldn't.
Not saying they couldn't figure it out, but it would take way too long. And with how fast technology moves, they don't have the time for that.
No, they don't. And Microsoft doesn't move that fast. They might have a lot of very talented and very smart people there, but they're not nimble. That's not how their corporate structure works. So I don't see them being in a position where they could pick up a hardware manufacturing company and running with it.
Yeah. Interesting times at the very least.
Oh, yes.
All right, Michael, that's your cue. What's next?
Oh, okay. I think we should go to our iDevice picks.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, Jeff or Adam, which of you would like to go first?
Doesn't matter. I have a more unusual pick, and in line with our ongoing space theme.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
Going on right now. So I mentioned I'm in the San Diego iOS group, and the San Diego Mac users group. And through that group, I met a great guy named Jeff Rutan. I don't know if I've mentioned him on the show before, but he is the son of Bert Rutan, the famous aerospace designer. If nobody knows who that is, you should look it up. But he's the guy that built Spaceship One, which was the commercially built spacecraft that won the X Prize. Richard Branson and Virgin bought the rights, and they're now making spaceships, and they're going to send average people into space on Virgin Galactic. They're building a spaceport and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he has many, many other planes. I mean, famous airplane designers got planes in the Smithsonian, stuff like that. Well, Jeff has been working on this project, I guess now for about 2 years, to recreate, I think almost all, except for the Black Ops stuff. He was telling us last night, there's still some plane designs that are in the Black Ops stages, but something like 100 and some odd of his dad's designs, he's converted into Lego models.
Ooh,
that is so cool.
And he's going to be putting out an 8-series, a series of 8 iOS apps with all of the plans and really detailed 3D models and all the information on how you can build all this stuff. And he set up a website at ASBricker or aerospacebricker.com. You can go to either domain, but I think ASBricker is a little bit shorter. and easier to go to. And you can check out what he's up to. I'm not sure when, if he has a release date set, but there is a sample model up there right now. So you can build, it's the long, easy 1/45th scale model of one of his dad's, I think it's his dad's plane. It might be his uncle's, both his dad and his uncle are airplane designers. So
that's pretty cool.
Very cool stuff. And Jeff is really into building web apps. So the whole thing actually is, the whole website is a web app. So if you do the save to home screen thing, you can run it offline and have just the website as a web app up and running on your
nice
system. So pretty cool stuff. Yeah. And he was just out, and there's a huge conference in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, I believe it is, where the Wright brothers flew their plane. Like 500,000 people show up for this big conference, and he has all his models at the museum there, the Lego models. So if you're in that area, you can go actually check out the actual models.
Wait a second. When is this?
It just happened.
Oh, okay.
He was just there a couple weeks ago with his dad and his uncle.
Oh, I missed it. Well, I don't know how far Oshkosh is, but if it's in Wisconsin, I generally assume I can get there. Because I'm in Northern Illinois.
So. It happens every year. It's a huge convention, aerospace convention, and people fly in and camp out, and thousands of aircraft on display and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, there was an air show in Chicago last weekend. This past weekend as well.
So everybody should check it out. asbricker.com, and when his app comes out, you know, pick it up.
Cool.
Because there's going to be a series of 8 of them. So he's completely self-publishing. He had been trying to look into getting it published and just decided he was going to do it all himself. So
awesome.
Yep.
All right, Jeff.
And it's Lego and it's space and it's iPhone. So 3 awesome nerdy things. I couldn't not pick it. Sorry.
Yeah. Jeff.
All right, I'm kind of torn. Do you want the kind of esoteric-y thing or the kind of cool, useful thing?
Which one do you want to do?
I want the cool, useful thing.
Okay.
Cool, useful thing.
Or do
thing.
Them both. Do them both.
No, don't do both. Save one for next week.
You tease. All right, do the useful thing.
All right, so I came across this cool app this past week called Twisted Wave. So what it is an audio editor app for the iPad, and in many ways it's like GarageBand in that you have your tracks, you can edit them, but where GarageBand tends to be geared more towards people that want to produce fun music, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Twisted Wave is geared more towards people that need to actually do audio track editing.
Awesome.
And it's easy to use. It's easy to learn. One of my favorite things, I played with it on a friend's iPad for like 2 minutes and then immediately bought it. And what sold me on it was that you can set the part of the clip that you want to edit out. And when you cut it out, everything else snaps back together and fills in that empty space.
Awesome.
And I went, okay, that's worth $10 for me right there.
Yeah. So it's $10.
I think it's $9.99.
Yep. It is $9.99. They have a desktop version I was just noticing on their website, and it's $80. Oh, why wow. is there such disparity between iOS and...
The disparity is because I think developers made a rush to the bottom with prices on the iPhone when the App Store first opened. And so they pushed themselves down to price points that are actually, I think, too low for what the products are in most cases.
Yeah.
But you can't get the prices back up in most cases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the only
$20 or $30 app easily to me.
One of the very few developers I've seen that aren't afraid to charge what an app is worth would be the Omni Group.
Yep. They're doing it right.
Yeah.
And good for them.
Mm-hmm. The developers should take heed. Yeah. I mean, I used to work at Nick Software and they put Snapseed out, which is just an amazing, amazing
Snapseed
image editor.
Snapseed is so cool.
Yeah. And it's $5. You need to buy it. That should be a $20, $25, $30, maybe even $40 app. I don't know. Probably at least $20, if you ask me.
I agree.
I mean, it doesn't do everything that, you know, a desktop image editor can do, but it does sure a heck of a lot. And just the masking, you know, selective correction feature alone is hugely valuable. So this twisted wave thing looks awesome.
Yeah.
But charge more.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, speaking of charging more, so my pick is $1. The app is Verbs. It is a instant messaging application which supports Google Talk, AIM, MobileMe, which I guess, are we going to get a AIM protocol with iCloud? Do you know? Who knows? But it does support
messaging. We can go down a rat hole here. Apple's messaging system is completely screwed up across the board.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm supposed to use iChat or FaceTime or, you know, what.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah. Maybe we'll get FaceTime. But anyway, it supports all the current most popular ones. So Google Talk, AIM, MobileMe, and Facebook. They just recently added Facebook, which is great. And it even supports, and this is something that Beehive IM does not even support, it even supports the ability to go idle on Facebook chat because they, for whatever reason, you were permanently available in Beehive IM. So
fun.
I would occasionally get messages from people saying, you know, hey, and I'm like, wow, I didn't realize it said that I'm available. So it's $1 for the application. It's very pretty. It's very simple. And it has, so you can view all the accounts that you have. You can have multiple accounts logged in at the same time. It works with your address book. That's the key feature for me. So on my Mac, I use iChat and it integrates with the address book. And that means that I don't need to know what some people's crazy screen names are. It just pulls in what their name is from the address book card, and Verbs does that. So that's very nice. You can see individual account lists. So you can just go to your, let's say your Facebook chat list and see just people who are online with Facebook chat, the real Facebook chat, not the new combined insane one that they have where it looks like you're online, but you're not. Or you can pull up all accounts and see everything combined. And so if you have multiple people, like I know Jeff on Facebook and on iChat, so it shows me which account I will be messaging him from. And it has a really neat feature where you can set certain contacts as favorites. So you swipe right, like with the Twitter app, you swipe right on their name and you can tap on the star and it will add it to your favorites list. And then you can condense your entire list. So if you only talk to a certain couple people all the time, you can just add them to your favorites and then they, will only appear in that list, in that condensed list. So for $1, you get the application that does all those things. However, it does not come with push notifications, which makes sense because developers have to worry about their push notification server and that costs them money in order to run that. So if you want to upgrade to something that works in the background, it'll stay on in the background. The connection will stay active for about 10 minutes, I believe. If you want it to work with push notifications, it'll keep all of your accounts logged in for up to 7 days. So all you have to do is just bop back into the application and then it resets your 7 day period. So if you're using chat pretty frequently, then it's a perfect upgrade. So an in-app purchase, $5 for Verbs Pro. And yeah, it also has integration with Cloud App and Dropler. So for all of your file sharing, so if you want to share a file or an image or something like that, it works great with that. And it's very fast, very pretty, very simple. It has a really nice tabbed chat interface. So when you open up multiple chats, you have this little tab button up in the right-hand corner. And you can tap on that to zoom out, kind of Safari style, or you can even swipe back and forth and very easily switch between chats. So it's $1. It's called Verbs. It's very nice. And that is my pick.
Can I ask a quick question before we finish up about push notifications?
Sure.
Because I think this is, every time, I think I've asked this on the show before, and it might just totally beat me. Push notifications, whosever service it is, just never seems to work right for me.
Huh.
I seem to get like random push notifications. Like I have them turned on for certain apps and it seems like I get some, but then I don't get others. I go into the app and it's like, oh, well, there's a newer one than that one that was showing. But I don't know. Maybe it's just part of the messaging thing and maybe it'll be fixed in iOS 5. I have no idea, but it seems like I've never gotten reliable push notifications from any app.
I don't have a problem.
Yeah, see, you say that every time.
I have mixed luck.
Okay. So, listeners, this is your homework. Write us, email us if you think push notifications works great or if it is messed up.
Sure, and you can call us.
Because I'd like to know, because it just does never seem to work for me.
Yeah, you can give us a call. The number is 202-642-6667. You can also email us with feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. So the best way, if you're going to leave an audio comment, and that works best for us because we don't have to read it, we can just listen to you actually ask the question or give us the information. Use the voice memo app on your iPhone and email it to feedback at wehavecommunicators.com, and that'll be the best way for us. Of course, our iPhone picks in the show notes are all at wehavecommunicators.com. We'd really appreciate it if you'd rate and or review the show in iTunes. Of course, our advertising is handled by the wonderful folks at Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's also on Twitter, at jgamet is his handle. And you can find his Zazzle store at zazzle.com/jgamet, which also includes the wonderful We Have Communicators mug, which you can get in varying sizes, as well as a frosted beer mug and a beer stein and other assorted goodies.
Right. And so I've had my We Have Communicators mug for a few months now.
Has it crapped out on you yet?
No. Everything still tastes just as awesome in it, and it's been through the dishwasher many times, and the artwork is still holding up just fine.
Excellent.
Yeah, mine is right here in front of me and looks like the day I bought it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So very good quality from Zazzle.
Yep.
So Adam, whose head are you drinking from?
Usually Michael's, because I hold it in my right hand and Michael's usually facing me. So,
yeah, I have I drink a lot of coffee, so I'm guessing that the coffee that's in my head is probably pretty good.
It probably is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I tend to drink from you, Adam, because I'm left-handed.
Oh, cool.
Although occasionally I'll pick up the mug so that I'm actually holding the mug and the handle is wrapped around my fingers,
yeah,
which means I'm drinking out of me.
I do that as well. It's either you or Michael. Very cool. Rarely myself.
Okay, well, you're getting some drinking action since I'm left-handed.
Excellent.
Of course, you can find Adam Christensen at the MacCast, maccast.com. He's on Twitter. His handle is at MacCast. And of course, the member version of the MacCast is at member.maccast.com. And I believe you mentioned that the wonderful Ken Ray was on your show.
Yeah, we did a crossover show. I'm calling it Patently Stupid. we talked obviously about patents, and we talked about the Google announcement and the Motorola HP stuff from last week, and just
Motorola.
Moto Google HP
Google
tablety.
Yeah,
patent madness. And Ken has some great insights on that, is why I wanted to have him on there. He really follows a lot of the business stuff a lot more than I do. And
yeah.
And so I didn't want to be just a talking head for that episode. I really wanted someone who had some insight, and Ken is great. And so we did that show together. And then actually just right before that, I did a whole thing on the death of iWeb too. I had a bunch of people asking me about iWeb alternatives with the iWeb hosting going away. So both those episodes are up right now on the member feed. So
awesome.
So check that out.
You can find me on Twitter at Michael Johnston is my handle, or you can find my Lil Reviews at Lil Reviews, twitter.com/LIL Reviews. And I review various things, usually food, beer sometimes. So check that out.
Occasionally a movie.
Yeah, occasionally a movie that's maybe a year or two old, like Transformers 2. So yeah. Sometimes I do things that are a little more current and relevant, but whatever. You do what you can.
in 140 characters.
Anything off Netflix recently?
Pardon?
Anything off Netflix streaming that I need to check out recently?
Star Trek.
Yeah, that's on there. I have that on DVD.
Which the you have?
Lens flare and all.
What are we talking about? I'm missing the
nerd
reference.
You're talking about the new Star Trek, right? The J.J. Abrams thing?
No.
Oh, you're talking about classic Star Trek.
I'm talking about TNG, original series, Voyager.
I just started going through Enterprise, which I had never, ever seen.
Enterprise is fun.
Yeah,
you know, I really enjoyed Enterprise.
Scott Bakula is just a really bad actor. I'm sorry.
Which guy?
Scott Bakula.
Is that the...
Captain Archer.
Okay, I thought...
Dude!
I was going
to
make a...
Okay, what you need to go back and watch is Quantum Leap. Yes. Get you some Scott Bakula action going on.
I think I've seen that.
Oh, Michael.
Don't.
Just go watch...
Yeah, I've definitely seen a lot of Quantum Leap. I spent a lot of time... not going to school watching TNT reruns of Quantum Leap.
Then you should have known Scott Bakula. Anyway, he really hasn't changed, but I didn't realize he was not. I don't know. I'm not enjoying
him. He's decent. He's all right.
He's my favorite character.
You know what one of my big disappointments with Captain Archer was that through the entire series, I kept waiting for something to happen, like right at the beginning of an episode, and for Archer to sit there and go, "Oh boy." And it never happened.
It would never happen. All right. I think we better finish this thing up.
Yeah. All right. Then with that, we will see you next week on We Have Communicators.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do?